call the meeting to order. There is a quorum present. Meeting of House Labor Management Committee on House Bill 864. And the bill was introduced, I believe, after the deadline for individual introductions. It was introduced by the State Affairs Committee, if I understand it, was at the request of Mrs. Rudd. Mrs. Rudd, you can testify on the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill creates in the Office of the Governor an Equal Employment Opportunity Office for State Employment. Maybe I should go back and give you a little bit of my personal perspective on the need for this bill. In 1974, Governor Egan appointed me to the Equal Employment Opportunity Committee for the state, which was the committee that acted as an advisory committee to the EEO office, which he had established in his own office, in the Office of the Governor. So ever since then, I have had a very strong interest in Equal Employment Opportunity. And in fact, at the time, well, no, not at the time that I've been employed, appointed, but in 1972 and 1973, I had acted as the director of Equal Employment Opportunity for the Anchorage School District, which had at that time, as I recall, about 3,000 employees. So that I had a really strong interest in Equal Employment Opportunity, and especially in Equal Employment Opportunity in government agencies. Of course, when I came to the legislature, I resigned from the EEO committee, but I've always followed with interest the efforts for EEO in the state. Recently, we've all become aware through various means that there still are some problems with Equal Employment Opportunity and making it a reality in the state. And I'm ashamed to say that it didn't occur to me until a few weeks ago that one of the reasons why these problems exist is because the office has never been established statutorily. It's always been just simply there in the governor's office and rises or falls according to the governor's interest and commitment to it. But there's never been any statutory language saying that the legislature feels it's important to have an Equal Employment Opportunity Office and that that office be in the office of the governor and that have specific duties. So, actually, just before we became aware of the various concerns of the Human Rights Commission and so on, I decided to try to draft a bill to establish the office statutorily, and that's what this bill does. It does not change anything that exists at present, except for one thing, which I'll get to in a minute. All it does is establish what is now a function of the government, of the EEO committee statutorily, and it sets out the goals of that committee and the duties of that office. The thing that it does change is that recently the governor shifted the office, the EEO office, from his own office into the Department of Administration. And I have drafted the bill to put it back in the office of the governor. And the reason for that is that I have a very strong conviction that no EEO effort is really going to work unless it has high visibility, that is, unless it's in the office of the top person, and high commitment from that top person. And those cannot be achieved within the Department of Administration. Especially they can't be achieved in the Department of the Administration because, in my view, the Department of the Administration, because it is also the department in which the Personnel Division exists, has a real conflict sometimes between Equal Employment Opportunity and the Personnel Division. Equal Employment Opportunity basically should be looking at all of the personnel procedures, position descriptions, and so on, and there should be a fair amount of recommendations for change coming from the EEO office.
Could we solve that problem just by abolishing the Division of Personnel?
That's a very tempting. That's a very tempting idea. Well, you know, since you bring the subject up, you know, the Ombudsman has introduced a bill calling for a complete study on the Division of Personnel and the personnel system in the state, and I certainly support that. I think that's long overdue. We have not only the merit system and the EEO, but we also have collective bargaining and a couple of other veterans benefits and a whole lot of things that are thrown into the EEO system that really, I mean, not the EEO system, but the personnel system, that really mean it's probably, in my view, about time to take a really comprehensive look at the personnel system. EEO, of course, is set up to do that from one particular point of view. And when you put EEO and the Division of Personnel both in the Department of Administration, it seems to me you've got a standoff and you're not likely to get much accomplished. I think EEO has to have that visibility and commitment from the governor's office. So I have drafted this bill for the office to go back to the governor's office where it was until quite recently. And other than that, there is no change between the functions that are being carried out now and the functions I have established in the bill, an advisory committee, which exists today, and there are two members of it here, the chair and one other member, and I know that they would like to testify. I feel strongly that this committee should be advisory, although I understand that there is on the committee a difference of opinion, and maybe they will tell you about that. Some of the members of the committee feel that that committee should be a policy-making committee rather than advisory. The reason I think it should be advisory is that it all rises and falls on the commitment of the governor's office and of the administration. And if that commitment doesn't exist, the fact that the advisory committee would be policymaking doesn't amount to anything, because if the governor and the executive agencies are not willing to take that advice and do something with it, there's nothing that's going to make a policymaking committee more able to function. In EEO, probably more than in any other function, you have to develop a good working relationship and a trusting working relationship, and I trust that that's what would be developed between the EEO advisory committee and the governor's office. If that relationship can't be developed, then neither the governor nor the advisory committee will be able to function. We just have to assume that that's going to be possible for those people to do. But it's not desirable, I don't think, to put them into a position where they are making policy and confronting the governor's office. It just doesn't seem desirable to me, and I'll hope to address that tomorrow. And I don't have a fiscal note, and maybe you don't either, Mr. Chairman, for this. There is nothing in this bill that I'm aware of that is different from the present duties of the EU office, so that I believe that the present budget of the EEO office would probably stand as the fiscal note for the bill.
Mr. Leaf just passed out the committee copies of a memo to Senator Sackett from Senator Croft, who's chairperson of the General Government Subcommittee of Finance, which relates to the stellar employment record of the state of Alaska. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Mr. Chairman, this bill is not going to solve any of those problems. You know,
but
it's not going to make the state suddenly become a marvelous employer.
But doesn't this raise the question that you already raised, that is, the problem of keeping the Department of Administration in this
record that
the Division of Personnel
has? Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. But I wanted to say that I don't see this bill as, you know, solving all the problems and magically turning the state into a real EEO employer. What it does is lay a foundation, I think, and lay a foundation for the legislature to become involved and for the legislature to measure the performance of the EEO office against, because there is no statutory delineation of what the duties and responsibilities of the office are. It's not going to solve any of the present problems. I think that they're on their way to being solved anyway. But it does sort of give a foundation to the program that I think needs to be given and will possibly enable us to go ahead and solve the rest of the problems.
Questions for the members of the committee? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Who else wishes to testify?
My name is Thelma Frasher. I am from Anchorage, and I am a member of the Governor's Advisory EEO Committee. I'm very delighted that Lisa or someone did begin either a bill to pass to create some type of equal employment within the state. However, this bill is extremely weak. You are creating an office by this bill where you should be committing or creating a committee or a commission. This can, this bill can solve a lot of problems. If you continue with this bill, then you continue with what we have today, except you just made a law. What we have today is not adequate. The system we have is advisory. The members have great expertise and equal employment opportunity. However, they have no basis to force or to insist that the things they see, the programs, the plans they see should be done for the state are implemented. You would have no other than what you have today. You're placing tremendous responsibility by this bill on one person, and that person is politically responsible to the governor. EEO needs to be a stable, firm program. It does not need to be fluctuating periodically with the political powers. If you have a commission, that is your stability. They then can go to the governor in body and say, these things need to be done. They then can have the power to see that they are done, irregardless of what that person is in the governorship. The concept is extremely weak, and what you have today is only enforcing by law what you already have. You can see by the letters from Chancy Croft, you can see by the letters from different articles being on the agenda that that is not adequate. I don't believe it is one person's responsibility completely to have equal employment opportunity in Alaska. I don't believe that the governor should be entirely responsible for that. I think that he should assign that responsibility to a commission that has some power, some authority, and some expertise in the field. Equal employment opportunity is, as far as practically speaking, relatively new. The programs that you need to implement for the state of Alaska are relatively new. We can't expect one person or one governor to know all of these things. Yes, he should ultimately be responsible. But he should not have the, he should not be expected to carry out programs, to implement programs, or to appoint one person to do that. What you have by the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights is a body that is a commission that has litigation powers, that has policy making powers, that can determine an employer's guilt or innocence, so to speak. So you have an imbalance at the beginning of equal employment opportunity, and you should have some real teeth into your program by the same type of commission you are wanting to have an advisory committee. I don't know who the advisory committee would report to. What we've been doing, quite frankly, is spinning our wheels, as you can see by some of the reports. It will be no different if this law is passed.
Well, what do you, you say that the there should be a commission that should have teeth. What kind of teeth? What kind of enforcement power should it have? And how could that be set up, in your view, independent of the authority of the governor? Isn't anything like this under the authority of the governor anyway?
Yes, it should be. And no, I don't, when I say enforcement power, I don't mean enforcement as far as litigation. When I say enforcement power, I say they should be given the responsibility of planning programs and implementing them in all state departments. Through, they would do that through an EEO coordinator or the personnel director. No, I'm not talking about litigation powers. Then, if those things were enforced, they could probably turn it to the Human Rights Commission, who has those powers. I don't want to set up two agencies.
Well, then you're saying that the their actions should basically be administratively superior to that of the Division of Personnel, and they should tell the Division of Personnel
what to do. Yes, they certainly should. That's what they should be doing. The Division of Personnel should not at all be an equal employment opportunity as far as beginning programs or implementing them. That should be a separate entity. They should go by those guidelines. But they should not be the ones that initiate them.
Okay, Mrs. Rugg, would you sit with the committee, please? Since you're interested in this, I'm sure you have some questions to ask.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think I have the same problem that you do, and that is I don't understand exactly what teeth you're talking about.
Okay. I'm not talking about litigation teeth. I'm talking about a commission who basically sets together and who plans programs to increase employment, minorities and females in state government. A committee who would have the authority to go to the different divisions, whether they are within the departments, and say, these are programs that you should implement, and you should do it, and this is the time frame you should do it in. That commission should also know exactly where that department stands as far as job groupings for minorities and females. That commission should be responsible to direct the director. I'm not talking about five people going to different departments. I'm saying that that should be their responsibility to instruct the or guide the director, executive director, whichever one you had, to go and implement these programs, to go and utilize whatever facilities we have for training, if we don't have facilities, determine what facilities are needed, what training programs are needed. We are an advisory right now, and we can say governor, or that's all who we can say to now is the commission of administration. And before that, we had no more power. We rarely met with the governor, as you well know. So we were advisory. We met together. We had all these grand ideas. We had this expertise. And that we had no reason to believe anyone was expected to carry it through. And I don't believe equal employment opportunity should be in an advisory capacity. If you feel the need to enforce equal employment opportunity by your Commission for Human Rights, why don't you feel the need to enforce it initially by training programs, affirmative action plans, goals, and timetables?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I read all of those powers into this bill. I really do. I mean, that's what the advisory committee is set up to do, is to advise the director on all of this stuff. Now, she says direct the director, and I guess maybe that's where we get into a little bit of difference. Because I don't want to put the director in a difficult position between the office of the governor, where he has to operate, where he has to be able to function, and he has to be able to persuade people, and another group that is telling him, do this and do that. And that puts, in my view, the director in an absolutely impossible situation.
I disagree. I think it takes
Ma'am, I don't think this is the right explanation.
I can't remember what I was trying to say.
Go ahead.
Excuse me. I disagree. I don't think that the governor or anyone or a director should be directly appointed by someone and then expect to be effective. We're not talking about fighting or victory. I think the director, to be effective, should be protected by a body that he or she would report directly to.
Mr. Chairman, I just disagree with you.
Well, it's unclear to me, what really the function would be. I suppose you're stating that in your view, the commission would somehow be giving orders to the director of the Division of Personnel and vetoing personnel policy decisions if they felt that they were not in compliance with their view of equal employment opportunity. And I suppose that could be done mechanically in the bill. We don't have any language available to us to do that kind of thing right now. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about?
The thing I'm talking about is the concept of the whole bill. Rather than creating an office, why don't you create a commission?
We can do that. I understand your comment about the concept, but you know, charming love, rather notwithstanding, we have to go from concepts to actual language of bills occasionally, and I was trying to figure out what would be in the meat of the bill. Sounds to me like if we were to redraft this bill the way you're talking, we would basically have the commission you're suggesting directing the director of the Division of Personnel and people at the commissioner level also.
Well, look at this. I believe it says that they are to go in and to look at personnel policies and procedures. Why would you even have it in there if you didn't think it was important? I mean, what are they going to do with it?
I didn't say I thought that was wrong. I was asking you a question. Is that what you mean?
Not in directing the director of personnel. I believe that they should point it out. It should still go to the governor and say these things are wrong. And naturally, the governor always has the last yes or no. I agree with that. And I'm not talking about in any way directing any department other than the training programs. I'm saying that they should have, through the governor, this commission, the responsibility of implementing training programs within any department to create a better minority female profile. What you have is you can do all of these things and you can advise the governor and a director can advise the governor and you still end up with a letter from Chancellor Croft with all of those figures. And I'm saying it isn't adequate, that we have had that, not by law, but it has been there and it has not been effective. And thus everyone's here is pleased with the posture of the state governor.
You still have my attention. I'm trying to make some notes of an idea based on what you were saying.
We have most of the concepts that are important in most of the procedures that we have in effect with the EEO office or commission. However, on the very front page, when you reduce it then to an advisory capacity, then you're throwing the whole bill away.
She has said, except for the phrase direct the director, has been perfectly acceptable to me that the committee should be doing all of those things. What I want to avoid is putting the director in the position where he's torn between the committee and the governor's office. And when you're working in EEO, you have to work within the system. I mean, there's no possibility of working outside the system. You have to work within the system because you're trying to change the system. And that's what I'm trying to avoid, is putting the committee outside the system where the possibility of being effective is lost.
Mrs. Rudd, apparently there is now an Equal Opportunity Commission, is that correct?
Committee. There seems to be a heavy emotional baggage with the word commission, and if that is going to satisfy people, just calling it a commission instead of a committee, that's okay with me, so long as they don't get into that situation where they're pitting the director against the governor's office or vice versa.
What I started to ask was, why is there no reference to that committee in the bill, if you're going to be making this function statutory and now exists only by executive order?
There is.
Well, I was fanning through the bill, and maybe my eyes are... Oh, yes, it's
Advisory
right there.
Committee on line 19.
Okay, you mention it here, and it doesn't seem to do anything after it's mentioned.
That's possible. This is the director.
Yeah, it's set up and created, and then the director does things all the way through the rest of the bill. I have some ideas about something here, but I'll listen suggest that we listen to some more witnesses first. Other members of the committee have questions. Mrs. Rasher first.
See you at your hearing this morning, so I thought I would like to comment on. I would like to support the general concepts of the bill and most of the things that Lisa said in reference to putting it back into the office of the governor, where it has that purview over all of the programs, rather than appearing to look at the program from the office of administration or department of administration, whichever can be used. There's a couple of things that I would like to mention that possibly, and I'm not that astute on the legislative procedure, but if this bill could require two things that may put the legislature in a better position of being able to monitor and deal with the subject matter that is equal employment opportunity in the state government. The development of what they term affirmative action plans provides a number of people with the opportunity to discern what individual departments see as the problem areas and how they intend to deal with those problems. So in the business of equal employment opportunity, they have started to become very valuable documents to provide guidelines on where you are and where you want to go at the end of some period with the resources you have available. So if this bill, or if it is the possible through the legislative procedures to mandate that an office such as this would provide the legislature annually with some kind of a plan such as that, so that the legislature could have a look, excuse me, and get a better handle on the problem, then it would seem to be valuable that that would be added to this bill. The second item that I think might serve the legislature well in keeping a track of how the state is doing in this area would be to require this office to provide an annual report on how the state government.
Sounds like you were reading my notes here.
Well, I should probably have said I served as an EEO officer for a federal agency in the state for a while and presently served as the chairman of an advisory committee. That's why I was interested in the person who testified prior to these comments. But the whole idea of, from my point of view, of establishing offices such as this is to provide the means to sort
of... That is a designated smoking area, in case you're
sure. I guess I was about to get arrested. But the two items that I mentioned would appear to provide the legislature with what I think it's an important part of their responsibility of seeing how we're doing with the resources we're expanding in these areas. Because when the office is in the Department of Administration or on the governor's staff, it's still costing the state money. And there is still something that we want to accomplish by having it there. The idea of developing affirmative action plans, this should always be done by the entity responsible for carrying it out rather than by the governor's office. The governor's office should probably compile a group of these plans that come from the different departments of government and then monitor how well they're carried out. Is the now way of really getting a handle on what is the problem, what do you want to do, what period of time. The annual report that I spoke of would then be a good way for the legislature to get a concise monitoring on how that's happening. And I would also think that it would provide the legislature with an opportunity to decide how much revenues or how much resources we want to expand for the program. If we're doing, really well, maybe we don't have to put as much as we did last time. If we're not meeting our goals and objectives, maybe we have to provide more. So I think those two things would be important. The other thing that I would like to comment on in reference to the subject of a commission having statutory authority to direct the office, I personally reject that. I think the responsibility should remain with the governor for guiding this program, with the office being a part of the governor's staff, or sitting, I don't know how you relate to that, but directly under the governor rather than in a department as it does now, would start to move toward the person who is acting as the director of that office having a more direct line to advise the governor and all of the other department heads on exactly what the state of equal employment opportunity in the state government is. To have a commission, and as I mentioned a minute ago, I serve as the chairman of the advisory commission, and when I accepted the position in my agency, it's a collateral duty. I accept it on the basis that it is advisory, and our committee advises the director of areas that we think need attention. Now, the director has to make a decision whether his resources will require that attention in that area at that time. That committee can't do it. We do review the affirmative action plans developed by the departments in our agency. Once again, through the director, we can advise the directors of those departments what we think some emphasis should be or where we think that they need additional effort. But once again, the heads of those departments have to reflect back to the director whether or not the resources they have to do that. So I see this as an advisory function rather than a function that will direct departments on carrying out these activities. That's probably all I could add at this time. As I said, I just got the thing this morning, and I just thought I'd like to come up and make those comments.
Mrs. Wren?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to thank Frank for coming. I've been associated with Frank and E.O. efforts for some years in Anchorage. It's just delightful to see him. He's a very able person.
Other members of the committee? Johnson, I suppose since you pretty much started reading my mind here, I'll disclose what I was writing down while Mrs. Thrasher was talking. That is, it would, maybe this goes in the direction of what you're talking about, without putting the committee or commission, if that's what it's to be, in a position of ordering the governor and the director of the Division of Personnel. There could be some problems with that. But it seemed to me that just giving something the light of day occasionally has a great enforcing, self-enforcing nature to it. If what's put in the public eye is at all responsible and wise. And I was wondering about the committee coming out with an annual report that addresses with particularity the attempts or lack of attempts by departments and divisions of state government to solve equal employment imbalance problems and firm suggestions on how they would be solved and review whether or not any previous committee reports seem to have had any effect and then have that report made annually to with recommendations forwarded variously to the Human Rights Commission. Of course, it would be to the governor, but also it would include recommendations that would go to the Human Rights Commission. And I suppose the report would go to the legislature, and perhaps even legislative recommendations. I don't know if that's getting ultra-virus out of the governor's hands or something. And then possibly to the ombudsman if there's some problem with just the way a state agency is functioning. That's just some sketchy notes I put together here.
I would sort of concur with that. I sit on quite a few committees, and at this stage in my life, when I'm asked if I would sit on a committee, I ask if it's advisory or if there's a function that we're going to be responsible for, you know, delegated in some written statute for carrying out. And I do accept positions on advisory committees, but that's when I think the subject is such that I want to be in a position of making somebody aware of what the thoughts are in that area, whether they carry them out or not. In the instance that if this bill were to require, as I indicated, a written affirmative action plan, that would be a document that that committee would then comment on several times a year in reference to guidance or maybe evaluations from the director of that office, how they're doing. At the end of that period of time, that committee could very easily look at that document and look at the results and then comment on how the state government was carrying out that plan and expending those resources. Once again, it's advisory, but I think it's an important function that somebody has to do in such areas as equal employment opportunity. I just personally don't think that everybody who's interested or involved should have the authority to direct the program. The directors, and then you start to wonder who has the responsibility for what function. And it starts to get muddled because I will say that you had the responsibility for directing that and getting it done, and you will say that I had the responsibility for the direction, and we will have a fight rather than progress in a program.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Someone else wish to testify?
I'm a member, my name is Marjorie Rabbit. I'm a member of the Juno Affirmative Action Coalition. And I'll tell you just a little bit about the coalition.
I'm sorry, what is your last name?
Rabbit, R-A-B-B-I-T-T. Just like rabbit, only with an S.
A very imperial looking rabbit. Go ahead.
The Affirmative Action Coalition is made up of a group of men and women who last fall began looking around and deciding that something more needed to be done about affirmative action. We hunted up the state affirmative action plan, found it actually, it was difficult to find it, but when we did get it and read it, we found it was quite a good plan, but definitely was not being implemented. So we decided to form ourselves into a coalition to see what we could do to get this plan actually into action. Our preparations led up to us meeting with the EEO Advisory Board on February 22nd, where we put in a list of 12 recommendations and picked up a couple more from that meeting. Things that we thought needed to start being done. I want to give you just a few statistics. I know you've had a lot thrown at you, but I'd kind of like to get these into the record. It's been shown that 15 years ago, women were making 70% of the wages that men made. And right now, women are making 57% of the wages that men are making. In other words, the gap is widening. And this is true of...
Oh, is that figure relating to the state government here? Is that,
no, this is a national figure.
Okay.
And the last time it was presented by the Washington State Women's Commission. It's a national figure. The Women's Bureau of the U.S. Department of Labor just recently put out a pamphlet about women with low incomes. Just one of the statistics in that shows that one out of four families that are headed by a white woman worker, is a poor family, comes under the poor category. And two out of four families headed by a black woman come under the category of poor families. Now, of course, these figures that I have deal specifically with women. I think we all know that black minority men, that Latino men, Native Americans, Native Alaskans, are down at the bottom of the scale. Well,
legislators are also discriminated.
Sorry about that. We'll work on that next. And of course, you are familiar, I'm sure, with the General Government Subcommittee statistics of Alaska. Now, dealing with Alaska, 80% of the women in state government are in the low pay range, and less than 10% are in the high.
That last reference you had was to this report I talked about at the beginning of the meeting.
I haven't seen it closely, but I'm sure it is.
It was the one same data was, I guess,
right,
the press about 2, 3, 4 weeks
ago. Right, I got it from the press. I have the article. Yes, that's the report. Now, the coalition isn't particularly interested in getting women or minorities into the high-paid positions, but we want to see them throughout government in the medium-paid positions. It doesn't have to be one or two people in a high-paid position. There needs to be openings all through the middle level, so it's not always on the bottom. Just one thing. And incidentally, I'm making two reports, one for myself, and I'd like to read the official affirmative action report into the record if you so decide. I just want to say that I support this bill fully, and nothing would, in its written, as it is written now, would keep me from supporting it. But as a layman, I'm not sure it should be advisory committee. I tend to think it should be a policy-making committee. Now, I've listened to Ms. Rudd, and I guess I don't understand all the machinations of government. I was interested in listening to the gentleman who just spoke before I did, because I haven't heard those particular arguments about advisory committee. But it's just that, to me, it seems like if you're an advisory committee, then you go to the governor and you say, this is what we advise, or you go to whoever and they say, thank you for your advice, goodbye, and that's it. Whereas it seems to me, if it's a policy committee, there's more weight.
Well, here's a suggestion I'll offer. The Constitution does say that the governor has the executive responsibility, and it can be delegated by the governor, and the legislature can establish the various departments, but the buck is supposed to stop on his desk. And at least it seems to me that a kind of middle ground between I think the bill is somewhat weak right now. It just says advisory committee, period. The middle ground between that and a bill that says that the committee or the director is telling the director of the division of personnel and the governor and everybody else what to do would be along the lines that came out of Mr. Austin's testimony and some of the questions I asked, and that would be that the committee would have specific functions relating to affirmative action programs, reviewing them, making reports, and putting them into the public eye. Because here's the problem. If the committee is setting the policy, and it actually is, if somehow you could get away from the constitutional problem and the buck were stopping in the committee's desk rather than the governor's, if the committee were making the policy and it was being complied with, then the committee would have to defend it rather than criticize it. See, I see a group like this, if they were functioning well, to be maybe one, two, three, or four steps ahead of the executive authority, or one or two or three, 4 years ahead of saying, well, you're doing a good job, but here's what you haven't done yet. But if they're setting the policy, they'll be patting themselves on the back, saying, we're doing a great job because, you know, if we, otherwise we have to be criticizing ourselves. I interrupted your testimony.
Well, that's all right. In other words, you're saying that in the context of action, mm-hmm. an advisory committee can be ahead of policy. Mm-hmm. Is what you're saying?
Well, I'm suggesting something a little heavier than an advisory committee, but not one that actually has the firm responsibility for implementing policy.
Well, I think, we could certainly look at that sort of thing. The main thing that we thoroughly support is that this should go back into the governor's office. It should be directly under the highest elected official. It should not go through another committee. It should be, the responsibility should be clear.
Okay. Can I ask you or Mrs. Rudd or anyone, because of the committees I've served on the legislature, I don't know the answer to this, maybe the other question. How long has it been in the Department of Administration? Is that relatively recent?
Sure. About a year and every 2 months.
About 14 months.
After the last session. Because of management and efficiency review, which made the recommendation.
Could you state your name for questions?
My name is Chalene Moore, and I'm chairperson for the Governance Advisory EEO Committee. I'm not sure what committee I am on now, but it went back because of the management review. That was a recommendation that it be placed under the commissioner's office, and I think we've been under every office except, Fish and Game. We've been roaming around. Excuse me, Mrs.
Okay.
Thank you.
I finished my personal testimony. Now I have here written testimony from the Affirmative Action Coalition. This was put together by a subcommittee of the coalition late last night. I'm just seeing it for the first time. There are things in here I could not answer questions to.
Well, how long is it, by the way?
It's about a page and a half.
Oh, okay. Maybe we could ask Mr. Martin to duplicate that and put it in all of our folders so we can be looking at it right now. And maybe members have questions of you or there are other witnesses.
Fine, I will certainly answer anything I can find the answer to anything else, just not right.
This comes from your group?
This comes from the legislative subcommittee of the Juno Affirmative Action Coalition.
There are other members of that group here?
There's one other member
okay.
here. Most of them are away at work this morning.
Okay. Are there questions to members of the committee? Ms. Rabbit? Okay, thank you very much. When we get those copies back, the members may have questions of you or the other member about what's in that material.
Right. Okay, fine. Thank you.
I have one question from the general practice. At least I can answer a question. There's reference to protecting classes. I didn't find the definition.
I can't hear, John. Reference to what?
Reference throughout the bill to protected classes. And I couldn't find a definition either in the bill or in Chapter 19 or Title 44 or...
I think you're right. Generally, protected classes in EEO and human rights work means any group which is protected against discrimination by state or federal law.
There is a standard.
But I think you've raised a good point. Well, I don't know that there is, and I think you've raised a good point that we should either define that term or use another term.
Mr. Head. The committee that the governor appoints, this is a different committee than any one that exists presently. And I'm
well, there is an EEO advisory committee.
Right, but this is just in addition to and stood up or?
I would assume that the governor would appoint all the present members to the statutory.
I'm just wondering how they. Apparently there's something else under Title 44 covering how they get funds for travel and that sort of thing. I don't see anything here about how that would work with an appointed advisory committee. It doesn't say how they get together to advise or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's covered somewhere else.
No, I don't know that it is. That was a note I just made to myself a few moments ago.
All right, sure, there's something like that in the
travel
statute.
Travel and per diem funds
yeah.
are available. They should, you know, the usual language,
and
we just forgot to put it in there. They're entitled to
travel
for the funds, like other members of
the Board's. So we always put in the caveat unless they're legislators or something like that. But they shouldn't be. Should there actually be some kind of a member, beyond this just composed of five persons who are broadly representative and so forth, and actually, have a caveat for this. I wonder if there out of five people, there ought to be three people who are already, you know, conceivably with that, you know, the governor appointing a majority of them, would be state employees, would then be somewhat in a position of having to defend their own bailiwick or the departments they work for.
Well, as a matter of fact, at present, Mr. Chairman, the director of the Division of Personnel is a member of the advisory committee. That has both advantages and disadvantages, I imagine.
Fox in the hen house.
Yeah. But there are advantages, too, in that he knows the personnel system. And he can
how about
Hick? How things happen. So,
well, it seemed to me maybe we ought to have a longer section on that.
Yeah. If he were to be a member, I would prefer that he be ex officio.
I should. Everybody's about reading my mind tonight. Ex officio non-voting is what I was writing just as you said that.
Yeah. As for the membership, we might, it seems to me that there are four factors that ought to enter into it. It's always fun to put together these committees that you try to cover the whole state, and you try to cover, I would want to cover these factors, race, sex, geography, and age. I would want the committee to be composed of the various races, the two sexes, geographically spread as much as possible throughout the state, and include spread in ages too.
You know, and as soon as you do that, you start listing green people and blue people and round and square people, and that gets rather sensitive.
I think that's why we chose the language of broadly representative rather than, but the four factors might be thrown in there, broadly representative of the
Maybe that goes to the definition that Mr. McKinnon was seeking.
Would language that, or would the existing language then exclude anybody who isn't a member of a protected class, whatever that is?
Suppose we, would there be anybody, is there anybody now on the committee who is a relatively high-ranking state official besides the Director of Division of Personnel?
No, no other state employees.
Well, that's what I was going to suggest, but specifically state, that the voting members not be state employees.
I'll see you. It's a nightmare. Mr. Chairman, your suggestion and Frank's on the annual report, I think it's excellent. I'm sorry I didn't include it. It's something that very definitely should be included.
Well, what I'm going to suggest, Mrs. Rudd, is I'm going to be very nasty, considering that we're trying to take care of the governor's faux pas with regard to unemployment compensation in this committee. I'm going to suggest that based on what comes out of this meeting, other conversations, if you come back and provide us with a work draft, CS, based on this testimony. Although I'll have to translate all the writing for
your ears.
I know you have absolutely nothing to do except reread 120 pages of draft criminal code. And Ms. Martin is passing out the written testimony from the Juno Affirmative Action Coalition. I did not bring any Oh, there's a more testimony? Okay.
I'm Charlie Maymore, chairperson of the Governor's Advisory Committee on Equal Employment. Just to sum it up, I don't have too much to say, except I would like to speak to the point about the section 4419964, and I'll get back to that. But since 72, I have removed, transferred, and placed under every agency that seems to exist. And I'm at the point now where I'm ready to go to the third floor and say it has to stop, because we will never be able to get our program off the ground the way we're going. There are many reasons for it, and I don't care to go into it now. But you realize that being moved from place to place, it's just like you said, you know, an ex-official member. I spent a whole meeting granting Pat Hunt the right to vote so he would feel like attending the meeting. Now I might have to go back and tell him, you can't vote. Well, you know, it's just things like that drive you nuts. And then he said, well, if I can't vote, what am I doing sitting here?
Well, if there's a statute saying he has to be a member as part of his responsibilities, he'd feel a little bit upset about not being there, whether or not he had a vote.
Okay, yeah. I'll meet you on that one next year. But that's just the kind of thing we've had. I feel that under the committee, it should spell out our travel. It should indicate that their funds will be set aside for that. Because if it's not there, I don't like the unwritten law. I want you to spell it out for me. The other thing is that the members have been polled this past week. I stayed on the phone from Friday until Sunday, and it's not that many members. I have this is five members, and the others in seven. Because you can't imagine how many times you get all four together, and then you have three tell you, I can't come down that day. I have to go somewhere else. And these people do travel that are on the committee quite a bit. The other thing that concerns me is that the committee feels that they do not like to be committed because committees are either extinguish themselves, self-destruct, or they want to feel that they, I know what it is, it is an emotional thing, but they want to feel that they have some backbone to themselves, and maybe an annual report, the review of the AEP, and of quite a few things that you listed, if they had this responsibility and they weren't meeting just to look at the figures and the statistics, they would feel better. Now, the one thing that has come into my mind this past year, every meeting that we have made recommendations, but those recommendations have to go to the commissioner, and then the commissioner has to send them to the governor. And within 30 days, I like to have them back so I can forward them out to the members. And I feel that in talking to them this past week, they did not have a chance to go through this bill. I think it hit Friday evening late, and they did not have a chance to go, so I couldn't read it over the phone. The bill would have been awful, but the polling of the committee is 6-1 in favor of moving it back to the governor's office.
Who's the one?
The Fox in the family. But not really one. You should give a credit representative Brown as a half vote.
Okay.
It was split both two ways.
And one guy used to go to Democratic district conventions in Fairbanks for years, the old system, and he always said, you never go with a vote, you get a proxy from chicken all the way through. He always vote. Chicken votes one half vote, yes, one half vote, no, on every issue. The Obama chairman just said, is chicken chicken? He said, yes.
There are, of course,
they are. You live here in Juneau, is that right? Or you don't?
Right, I do.
Okay. I would suggest that maybe if you could be in touch with Mrs. Rudd, and she knows Mr. Austin, probably get him on the horn in Anchorage, and using her committee phone budget to that place. And I'm being nasty.
I know.
Put together something that would more completely spell out the section you talked about, 964, which is the makeup of the committee, in the direction we were all talking about, and the other particulars about a reporting function that would bring to the light of day once a year whether or not the committee felt that the government was doing anything, and have a reporting rather specifically with recommendations to the governor, the legislature, and the ombudsman of the Human Rights Commission. Does anybody have any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I have Ms. Morrow's position. Is she chairperson of the EEO committee?
The existing EEO committee that exists now but with no statutory authority. It's, I don't even know if there's really a formal executive order.
Yes, executive order 21.
Mrs. Rudd, could you give us a copy of that, or maybe you could just... Charlie...
This is the 21 that was issued by...
Or Charlie can get it if you
should be
told
where
to go.
But is it true that this bill generally represents what is now existing in the executive? Is that about
that's
right?
That's true.
Word more or less?
Except that the president of the office is in the Department of Administration.
Oh, they're putting that in the last volume now, Joe?
Yeah, but it's empty now.
Well, then, if it isn't, if it's presently existing in an executive order, it seems like the testimony says it's not working very well. It's expected to work better then if you put it into law. Is that the idea?
Not necessarily. What I'm proposing here is to lay a foundation for it. Whether it works better or not depends on the will, really, of the governor more than of anybody else, whether he's willing to accept the work of the committee and try to make it work. It just seemed to me, thinking about the difficulties that the office has had, one of the difficulties they've had is that their ability to function has blown hot and cold, depending on whether or not the governor is really committed to it, depending on how much the governor's willing to budget for it, and all of those function factors. And it seemed to me that it would give the committee a lot firmer foundation, and the EEO office a lot firmer foundation if we put it in statute. Maybe you weren't here when I said I really don't see this as making it possible, just on the face of it, for the function to be any more useful than it is now. But it does give the legislature an opportunity to interest itself in the function more than it does now. It gives the office some very definite statutory responsibilities which have to be met, and so on. It's I think it will help a great deal, but I can't promise that it's going to, if you understand.
My meeting with the representative on Sunday afternoon, but anyway.
I put the cross on her shoulders to contact you, Ms. Bates.
I would give this.
I talked to one.
I talked to one of the members in San Diego, and his concern over this was that the committee part be strengthened, and that I would hate to see us lose touch with the recommendations that we are now making to the governor, and we are getting a direct response back. I don't want to lose that. We as a committee, if we're advising the governor, and that's what our title is, then I feel those recommendations should go straight to his desk, and he has agreed within 30 days to respond to them. And that is what is happening.
Well, there's no effective date on this bill, and this is the first committee referral, so if we were to move a bill out pretty expeditiously, and if the House is able to meet its deadline of getting all House bills over to the Senate by the 15th of April, I don't think we'll be able to do it. We're going to try. And even if the Senate were to act as quickly as it's been known to on some occasions, the bill could possibly have passed both houses until around the very earliest the end of this month. Since there's no effective date, that means it would take effect 90 days from the time that the governor took action, and he has a period to take action after passage. So you're talking about a total of about 120, about 150 days, or 5 months at the earliest that any version of this would become law, unless we put an effective date on it. I suppose what you're saying is don't put an immediate effective date on it, because and also make sure that it can, in transition, smoothly go from your current organization relationship to the governor, so that we don't interfere with your current activities. I have a question, and it's partly addressed to you, but it comes out of the written testimony from the Juneau Climate Action Coalition. They have an interesting comment on the bottom of the front page. Another written testimony. And finally, leaving the EEO office under the present commissioner of administration is tantamount to sabotage. He has obstructed communication with the governor. He has stalled on the implementation of the 5+5 plan. And he's been known to make sexist remarks. Well, I've been known to make sexist remarks, but Mrs. Rudd hears them every day in judiciary. I make them particularly to irritate her when I'm trying to get her attention.
I'll take you to task.
Yes, she does every time. But beyond that, without regard to that last comment, do you have any testimony with regard to that, or has it been that difficult under the Department of Administration at this time?
I cannot speak to Commissioner Allen's.
Not the last part, but I mean the thing about obstructed communication with the governor. Has that happened?
Not within my recommendations, no. And that might be because before we implemented that process in the Department of Administration to survive, we had to implement a process of communication. So we set a 30-day deadline, and the governor agreed to this.
But you had some problems when you first got into the Department of Administration.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm The point is, we have had involved as a communication process with the governor's office. No, I've been able to move my communications. They're in-house problems, things like if I give you something and you decide you want to be creative and rewrite it, I might have to ask you if that becomes your idea and not mine. So I prefer you make comments on it. We hang out the differences of that. I cannot respond to the communication with the public and dealing with the EEO and the commission. I have no knowledge.
On page 2, the Juno group kind of goes in the same direction that you have, and it raises another issue about what might be the redraft of the bill. There it says they, not the governor, should have the power to hire and fire the EEO director and set policy with a statutory mandate. I think that might go a little too much in that direction, in my view, at least the things we've been talking about here. One of the things I'd like to ask your opinion of, and maybe the members of that group, what about a kind of a middle ground that the governor would still appoint the director, but would appoint it from some 3 nominees selected by the committee, that he would still have it would still be his responsibility and he'd have some choice, but it would have to be somebody who was also accepted by the committee.
You have that now. That's the process, whereas the last director was appointed.
Is that in the executive order, or is that just kind of done informally?
It just happened.
The
process in electing directors, and God knows we've had them, we select the top 3 or the top 5, and then we make a recommendation to the governor with the top 2 or the top 3, and he has in some cases selected from that. In other cases, what was the last time, 136 applicants we had for the job, and they had to be screened through. And we made our recommendation to them. But none of this is, it just happens by our process of organizing it, or something should be, it just kept on hanging there. Nothing is on it except the executive order.
I wonder if Mrs. Rabbit has any comment about that last suggestion of putting something in the bill that would say the director was selected by 3 or 5 or something nominees of the committee and nobody else.
I should think so. I can't speak for the whole committee without having something in black and white. Certainly it seems to me something has to be in the bill in that regard.
Questions, comments, objections? Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 864?
Madam Chairman.
Hello.
I'm Spent. My name is Mike Harper, and I'm in the governor's office. I hold the position of the administrative assistant to the governor. And in that capacity, I have the responsibility or function of whatever you want to call it, of overseeing the agencies that are in the governor's office, of which we have about 300 people or something like that. And I'll get back to that, but as far as your legislation under consideration right now, I don't think there's anybody in the office of the governor that has any problem with the intent or with the notion that's behind, I guess it's Representative Rudd is the driving force behind this. I don't think there's any question that the governor definitely does see problems right now. I think he agrees the record of EEO hire in state government as well as other public sector and as well as the private sector is poor. But at the same time, I think he can say that he has attempted, not always successfully, but he has attempted to improve the situation tremendously, and I've got some things I can talk about there. Getting back to the location of the office, and it seems to me that sounds like a big issue of bone of contention as far as this legislation goes, because frankly, I think the current EEO committee and with the director, Mr. Glenn Campbell, I think they can or are doing most of the things that are lined out and I think the legislative body would like to see happen. I think after all, it really is, and I think several people hit it, is the commitment of the chief executive officer of whatever organization you have to make things work, whatever that might be. And in this case, EEO, I think the same thing holds true. If the chief executive officer feels that strong about it, and I think Mr. Hammond does, he's going to impart that charge to his lieutenants, and then they to their lieutenants. But I think it's a situation you've got to deal with all supervisors who have the ability to hire and impress upon them the need to look at this EEO situation and improve it. As far as the location goes, it was moved to the Department of Administration after the recommendations of the Management and Efficiency Review came down. And basically, the line of thinking goes something like this. There's a tremendous amount of things that are going on in state government. We have 15 agencies, 10,000 people, and certainly there's a lot of things to do. And there was not proper time or nor attention given to the EEO office while it was in the governor's office before. And I think Charlie, Mrs. Moore did point out to that. And I think the people that did the MERT report stated that, and along with several other agencies, moved these operating agencies over to a line department like administration, where you get more attention, and hopefully you'd be more successful in whatever service that particular entity is trying to provide. I would just say that I think the way it's working now, it probably could use some improvement, but I think we're opening up the lines of communication. The governor's, through several cabinet meetings in recent months, has definitely brought the hammer down on commissioners and cabinet members to make them aware of this problem and really ask their assistance in this matter. Wherever it might be, both figuratively, geographically, or organizationally, I think it's the commitment of the top people, and I think we have that commitment. I would say that it's our view, we would just as soon see it remain where it is, but that the communications, which I think is the issue, be opened up and they remain open, and there is contact between the EEO committee or commission or what have you, and the governor's office. However, if it's the view of the legislature and you're going to, tell us that this is the way you want to go, you definitely feel very strongly here and you do want to bring it back, I certainly don't think we are going to be opposed to that either. So
you're saying you would prefer, the governor would prefer to, if it's put in statutorily, leave it in the Department of Administration, but if we put it in the office of the governor, he's not likely to veto the bill.
So oh, certainly not. No, it's. I don't think that's the issue at all. I think the issue is people are upset about the EEO record. They have a right to be. We're doing a little bit better than, we think we're doing a little bit better than has been the case. We still don't think that's good enough, and we're going to do everything, and we have been doing everything we can to improve the situation. This piece of legislation, I think I'm not sure that it's all that necessary, but that to me is the issue, and I think we can improve the situation with what we have now.
Well, I suppose it's not all that necessary if you're working for the executive branch and you're interested in defending legislatures like to see things put into statutes, you see. See, governor can't change statutes, he can change executive orders. I guess it depends on what hat you're wearing. Questions from members of the committee? Mr. Arthur. Thank you. Is anyone else here to testify? We will adjourn the committee for now, and I'll ask Mrs. Rudd if she and her staff can get together with me and my intrepid staff over here, and we can talk about a possible
LCS that would take into account the testimony at the meeting today?
Right now, Mr. Chairman?
No, well, not immediate. Well, possibly get started talking to Charlie right away. I've got to make some phone calls. And if Charlie and you can do some, you get a chance to kick me every day at 3 o'clock. Try to get it so we've got something to bring the committee maybe as early as next week.
Thank you very much.